It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. American politics has become synonymous with polarization, divisiveness, and anger.
A 2023 Pew Research survey found that 55% of Americans felt angry thinking about the upcoming presidential election. When asked to name positive aspects of the U.S. political system, a third of people didn't say anything. Another 22% wrote nothing.
And you may have encountered or felt political anger yourself online or at a family gathering. So what can we do with feelings of anger in an election year? Wisconsin's own anger professor joins us now.
Ryan Martin is Dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW-Green Bay. He's a psychologist who studies anger and other emotions. And he's the author of books about the psychology of anger, including How to Deal with Angry People, 10 Strategies for Facing Anger at Home, at Work, and Online. Ryan, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I know we have anger year-round any given year. When we have a big political year, a big presidential race year like this, do you see increases in anger, or at least a change in what we're angry about?
Yeah, it certainly seems like we do, right? And I think that there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of it is the direct impact of, election consequences. But also some of it is just the indirect impact that election years can cause people a lot of stress. They can cause people a lot of just anxiety, navigating personal relationships, uncertainty. Elections have consequences, and I think those consequences have, an emotional impact on people.
This is probably a hard thing to measure. I know pollsters try to do it over the years. Do we have any indication that our political anger has gotten bigger over the years, that we've gotten angrier when it comes to politics?
Yeah, I don't, I wish we had just some sort of thermometer that would allow us to measure anger over time. And ultimately, we don't. What we have and what we typically do is use these sort of external indicators to get a sense of it. So we look at things like instances of aggression and how are people tending to express that anger. The problem with that is what those end up really being a measure of is specifically the outward expressions of anger instead of any kind of internal indicator. And the problem with that is that I think there have been people who have been angry about politics for a very long time. I think there were marginalized groups that were oftentimes very angry about political outcomes and for hundreds of years, but the aggressive expression wasn't necessarily there in the same way. And so I think part of what we're dealing with in the modern era is that some of those more aggressive expressions of anger have been normalized. And the normalization of that is really a big piece of what we are seeing.
That's interesting. What do you see as driving that normalization? I could see somebody pointing the fingers at particular politicians. I could see a lot of people thinking, hey, maybe it's the internet and our interactions on social media. Where do you see that?
Yeah, I think it's probably all of the above. Part of what we're seeing is one, if we think about the internet, one of the things that has happened there is politically, I think social media in particular has really divided people in ways we weren't as divided before. And what I mean is that we're more inclined to live in sort of the social media algorithm bubble that makes it harder for us to kind of have like a full view of and a more full understanding. But the other thing I would point to is, and I think you absolutely nailed it, it's the modeling that we're getting from some of our leaders right now who have been aggressive and verbally abusive in ways that we have never seen before. I shouldn't say we've never seen it before, but that we haven't seen in the same sort of numbers as before. And I think that modeling has made it feel okay for other people to communicate that way, right? So I drive down the street and I will see, signs in people's yards that are really aggressive signs, right? Using foul language and so on. That's new to me, right? That those are things that I wasn't necessarily seeing before, but I think it's been normalized in a way that it just didn't used to be there.
I want to talk a little bit about the mechanisms of anger. Ryan, you and I have talked about that sort of instant response. Let's say while you're driving and a fellow motorist offends us in some way, and we have that anger response. I kind of get that. Like, in that moment, I feel wrong. There's really not much I can do about it. I get angry. What is it about seeing, you know, hey, that person is expressing a different political opinion than mine? It seems like another degree of separation to get to that anger response.
Yeah, I think that sometimes those political opinions carry with them additional meaning in the eyes of or in the minds of people who view them. And so, if you see a pro-Trump sign or a pro-Harris sign, it doesn't just mean that person is pro-Trump or pro-Harris. It means that person might be a particular way, right? They might have all this identity or all of these values, and that identity and those values are things I don't like, or I find scary, or I find threatening, or I find frustrating. And so you're reacting not just to the political belief, you're reacting to what you perceive to be the identity behind it. And an identity that I think, and frankly, I think there may be some truth to that in some cases, that there is an identity behind it that is driving, those political beliefs. And that identity might actually be a threat to you.
Is it true maybe the other way, where if I've adopted a political affiliation, it isn't just that I support this, list of policies, but I am on team red or blue or whatever the case may be. Now my political view is a part of my identity, and that's why seeing that other opinion seems personally insulting as opposed to political differences.
I think that's absolutely true, that, if you support Harris, you've become sort of a member of that, what we call in social psychology, or that's your in-group. And so you see this other group as the out-group, right? That's the group that is working against you in some way. And because of that, you're more likely to feel anger or frustration that way.
I want to throw in another wrinkle here. You've mentioned frustration a couple times, and that idea of powerlessness. My political identity is a big part of me. I worry about the outcome. I feel like I really don't have much influence over that outcome. Does powerlessness affect our anger response?
Absolutely. So when you think about why people get angry in sort of general terms, it really oftentimes comes from our interpretation of these provocations, what these provocations mean to us. And a big element there is us assessing our ability to cope with those provocations. So the first thing we sort of do when we encounter any kind of provocation is we decide, is this bad, right? And so, like, is this wrong? Should they be spewing these opinions? Should they be saying these things? Then the second thing we do is evaluate how bad it is and whether or not we can cope with it. And what is a real critical central player in that feeling state or that interpretation is powerlessness. So if I say, yikes, this person has these opinions, and that's going to mean that, I think the election is going to go a particular way, and there's nothing I can do to stop it, it ends up leading to more feelings of anger, more feelings of sadness, those feelings of helplessness continue to drive further concerns about the election.
We're talking about anger this election year and how people can handle their anger with Ryan Martin, anger researcher and dean at UW Green Bay, also known as the Anger Professor. Ryan, I want to step back for a minute before we dig into some maybe practical advice. Something that may surprise people, and I know this from your research, we might think of anger as something that happens to us, right? It's out of our control. It's this visceral response. And a big part of your work, your research, and your teaching, I think, is this idea that, no, we can make some decisions. We have many ways to control and focus our anger responses. Can you talk about that concept a little?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we think about why people get angry, why they feel any emotion, there's all sorts of different components there. There's the provocation, the thing that we're reacting to. There's our mood at the time of that provocation, and then there's our interpretation of that provocation. And this all happens even before we experience the feeling itself. So when we think about how we can intervene, what we can do about it, there's all sorts of ways just in that, in those three elements right there. So one, we can be selective to a degree about the types of provocations we experience. So, you know, my approach actually to election season is to, you know, I don't avoid information. I get as much information as I feel like I need, but I also don't necessarily go overboard. I'll mute commercials when they come in. There are particular news shows I don't watch because I frankly don't want, it's not that I'm not engaging the process. It's that it hits me a little too hard and I don't like the way it makes me feel. So I avoid some things. But I think the other piece is when we find ourselves angry about politics is making sure that we can channel that anger into sort of healthy and productive approaches. And so, you know, when you're feeling angry, yeah, that helplessness that we talked about before comes up, but maybe there are places where you can take some of that power back, right? So if you have capacity to donate to particular candidates, that might be a way of doing that. If you can volunteer time, that might be a way of doing that. You can write letters to the editor, you can do things like that that help take that anger you're feeling and channel it into something productive and potentially pro-social as a way of dealing with it.
And that takes me to another thing I find really interesting about your work, Ryan. You definitely make the case that anger is not inherently a negative emotion, that properly used, it can actually motivate some really good stuff. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so all emotions exist in us because they serve us in some way. And so the same way your fear alerts you to a potential danger or potential threat, your anger alerts you to an injustice or poor treatment or something blocking your goals. And so your anger actually does two things. Step one is it alerts you to those potential negatives. The other thing it does is it energizes you to confront that injustice. And so when you get angry and your heart rate increases and your muscles tense up and you start to sweat and you get that adrenaline burst, that's your sympathetic nervous system kicking in, giving you the energy you need to fight back or to respond in some way. And what we see is sometimes people take that, you know, that activation and they use it for harm, right? That's when some of those political fights break out or some of that aggression we talked about breaks out. But there are ways you can channel that same energy into more positive and pro-social things, to use that energy to motivate you to get out and vote, to get out and donate, to get out and volunteer.
Let's take that to a concrete situation, Ryan, something a lot of people listening have probably experienced, a family get together, say, and we know every time relative one is on this end of the spectrum, relative two is on the other, they're going to jibe at each other a little bit. Okay, suppose you're one of those people, you don't want this to get angry and out of hand, but you've got that provocative comment, you feel that physical anger response you were just describing to us, and you don't want it to escalate. What are some ways we can do to maybe still have that conversation, but not have it get overheated?
Yeah, so I think the best thing about the example you just described is it's one we can see coming, right? And so that means we can plan ahead for it. And what I would encourage people to do in those situations is don't try to wing it. Anticipate that situation could happen, right? Because you've got this family gathering coming up, and you can actually handle that in a couple ways, right? So, you know, you could, depending on your relationship with this person, you could send them an email or a text in advance and say, hey, I want this day to be fun. I know we don't see each other, see eye to eye on politics. I'd love it if we could just skip that topic while we're there. Will you make an effort to avoid talking about that? Right. So now you're sort of preemptively saying, hey, let's not do this. That also means that if they do bring it up, you can say, hey, remember we talked about this, we weren't going to do this. And it gives you an easy out in the moment. if maybe you don't have that kind of relationship with the person, then you can work together with your partner or with a friend or with another family member and say, hey, if this person brings it up, let's help me with an escape route, right? Help me come up with a way we can get away. Or you can just come up with a thing you want to say in response when it comes up, even if that thing is, you know what, we don't see eye to eye. I don't want to talk about this right now.
That's dealing with other people. Let's go into our own brains now. Some people might be like me and have the thing where I think the word is perseverating, where you lock in on that negative, stressful thing or thing that makes you angry, and you keep replaying it in your brain. Not a healthy way to live, I don't think. How can we break that cycle, Ryan?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I'm one of those too, right? I find myself ruminating and just kind of running, perseverating and running through the same thing over and over and over again. And I think what I find about myself when I'm in that situation is that what it oftentimes means is that I didn't get the kind of resolution I want at the time. So it ends up feeling a little bit like when you get a song stuck in your head and that what you really need is to let that song play out, right? To finish that song. I think about it that way. I'm like, okay, so what can I do to try and get the resolution I need here? There are ways that maybe you can sort of finish that conversation. You can return to it in a healthy way if you want. You can try and again, channel that into something that gives you a little bit of power, because I think that powerlessness is still playing itself out. And if those things don't work, I think that's where there's a time for, say, mindfulness. I think there's a time for, the relaxation approaches, deep breathing, things like that, guided imagery to try and take you away from those feelings.
And finally, Ryan, how do we take a look at our anger and realize, hey, maybe I'm in a different place. This isn't garden variety anger. This is anger that is causing problems in my life, in my relationships.
Even though anger is and often healthy and can be really good for us, anger will oftentimes cause real problems. And I think what's important to note is that we have to think about those problems contextually. We have to evaluate sort of the impact that emotion is having in our lives. And so a couple things to be looking at. One is it damaging relationships? And that could mean, am I having frequent arguments with people? Or maybe people just find me scary or off-putting because of my anger. So is that happening? Is it driving me to engage in some unhealthy behaviors? Things like drinking too much or eating too much or driving dangerously or anything like that. Have I damaged property as a result of my anger? And then the other thing is, what impact is it having on my sort of the other parts of my emotional life? Do I find myself getting really sad or getting anxious or feeling guilty because of things I did or said when I was angry?
Ryan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
You bet. Thanks so much for having me.
That's Ryan Martin, Dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW Green Bay. Ryan's a psychologist known as the Anger Professor. He talked to us today about anger in this election season.